Hello and welcome to Car Talk from National Public Radio with us, Click and Clack, the Tappert Brothers. We're broadcasting this week from the Department of Youth Services here at Car Talk Plaza.
Well, we got a letter this week from one of America's youths, as we call them.
A youth?
A youth, yeah.
Okay, go ahead.
It's a handwritten note from a young guy named Jeremy. He's 11 years old, and I think it's commendable that we've engaged the youth of America.
And what makes you think we've engaged this particular youth?
Well, it's clear from the it is clear from the questions that he asks us that he's a regular listener. He asks three questions. Number one, what is a rack and pinion?
Oh, rack and pinion. Well, a rack and pinion is a steering mechanism in your car. Most modern cars have it. And it is a system that allows the rotational motion of the steering wheel to be transferred into rectilinear motion, and it does this with a round gear attached to the steering column and a flat gear, which is the rack, and as that round gear turns, it moves the rack back and forth and makes the wheels go left and right as you choose. You got it?
Excellent. All right, here's question number two. What is the secret to getting 73 miles per gallon?
Aha! What do you think?
Well,
considerable downhill driving.
All right, and here's question three. I'm only 11 years old. Am I too young to become a moron?
It's never too early to start, Jeremy. If my brother hadn't started early, he wouldn't be where he is now.
By the way, he says, I love your show. It's a mix of comedy and stupidity.
That's exactly what we're aiming for every week. Usually a little more stupidity. Well put. Look, if you'd like to avail yourself of our comedy and stupidity, you can give us a call. The number is 888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Jeremy, you're going to go a long way. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, this is Seth from Cincinnati.
Hey, Seth. What's cooking, man?
Well, I have a 1980 Ford Fiesta, and
oh my
I have a brake problem.
God! A Ford Fiesta, 1980, and how, pray tell,
how long have you had it?
I bought it in 2005, and I bought it from Albany, New York.
What the hell made you do that? I mean, of all the millions of cars that were out there for sale.
It needed a lot of work when I got it, but I'm like, a little fun little project for me.
How many miles on it?
It has 145,000 now.
Oh, it's practically brand new.
Does anyone else know you own this car?
Pretty much everybody. It's lime green. You can't miss it.
Yeah, okay. All right. So anyway, what's your problem?
I have a brake problem, and it usually only happens on the highway. I'll be driving down the highway, then all of a sudden, I'll lose brake pressure, and it takes about 3.5 pumps of the brake from the top to the floor.
Oh, nice.
Oh, this sounds safe.
But, yeah, and through the city driving, it doesn't happen, just on the highway.
But when you step on the brake, it goes to the floor?
It goes straight to the floor, lift it up, goes straight to the floor, lift it up, goes straight to the floor, lift it up, goes halfway down, and I got brake pressure back.
Do you have to lift the pedal off the floor?
No, it gives back the resistance, and it comes right back up.
Oh, for a minute,
it comes back.
For a minute, I thought you had a rope tied to the brake pedal.
Oh, no.
That might be next.
We've done that before.
And here's the thing. All the brakes except for the booster cylinder and one of the rear brake cylinders is new since 2005.
Why are you driving this on the highway? What are you, crazy?
Oh, it gets great mileage. I mean, I get between 38 and 45 on the highway, miles per gallon.
Yeah. That's not going to do you much good when you hit the brake and there's nothing happening.
Yeah, we can make sure that winds up on your tombstone. Seth died getting 38 to 40 miles a gallon.
Well, I've been smart about it. Like every 2 minutes or so, I'll be pumping the brakes just to make sure I've got brake pressure while I'm driving on the highway. And when I can, I avoid using the highway. And I'll tell you what it acts like is, you know, when you change your brake pads, you know, like when you first get back in the car, you have to pump it a couple times.
Yeah.
And then the resistance is gone and you finally have brakes again.
Yeah.
That's what it feels like. It feels like I have to push one of the cylinders back in.
Right.
To get pressure back.
What I think is happening, this thing, for those of you who aren't old enough, has disc brakes in the front and drum brakes in the rear.
That's true.
And just like you said, when you put new pads in, what you generally do is you push the piston all the way in to accommodate the new pads. So that when you put the new pads, which are a lot thicker than the old ones, There's room for them. You've made room for them by pushing that piston in. And then when you step on the brake, the piston kind of self-adjusts the brake pads so that the pads come in contact with the spinning disc rotor when you step in the car by moving only a very small distance, a fraction of an inch. Yours has to move a lot more every time, so it's just like you put in new brake pads every single time because something is pushing that piston in, and what's likely to be doing that is a bad wheel bearing.
Okay.
If a wheel bearing has too much end play, what it's doing is it's making the disc walk and push the pads, which is in turn pushing the piston into the caliper housing and making it just like you would put new brakes on. You understand
cool.
what I'm saying?
I understand exactly what you're saying.
So I think you've got to find out if you have a bad wheel bearing, and if not, you must have a bad caliper. But this is dangerous.
Yeah, that's why I've been avoiding using the highway. And since my job has me on the road, I'm a touring actor, actually, and I tour with a puppet show. So I get to use the tour van all the time.
How are your parents with that? Are they thrilled that you're a touring puppet show
that
guy?
I'm a touring puppeteer?
Yeah.
No, because it doesn't pay well.
It doesn't pay well, but... And you went to school to do what? To do this?
I went to school to be an actor. I've actually got 4 degrees. I got one in acting, I got one in filmmaking, one in photography, and one in botany.
Really?
Botany's kind of the odd one out there.
Well, you have a lot of opportunities to get real jobs.
Yeah, right?
Well, check out those wheel bearings. And it's going to be a front one. And if it isn't a wheel bearing, then you've got a bad caliper.
Sounds good.
All right. Good luck, Seth. And
well,
get this
you.
Fixed before you drive on the highway too much more. If you need a loan, my brother will send you some money.
Oh, I appreciate that.
See you later, man.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
888-CAR-TALK. That's 888. This is the kind of thing that you would have done when you were his age. You would have driven your car with no brakes and figured, when I need them there, I can always pump them up. 888-CAR-TALK.
You're right.
That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, this is Hannah from Brooklyn, New York. Right now I'm driving a 1999 BMW M3, and every time that I accelerate, it makes this kind of whistling, wheezing sound, kind of like, and it just goes with the accelerator, and it's been going for about 3 to 4 months right now.
3 to 4 months, and
you've done nothing about it yet.
No, I haven't, actually. It's actually my parents' car, and I just took it up to school about a month ago for a couple of weeks, and that's when I noticed it. But my mom says she's been hearing it for a couple months now.
Ah, okay.
Oh, and they decided to do something about it. They gave the car to you.
Exactly.
So explain the circumstances under which you hear this. You're driving along at a steady speed, and you don't hear the sound?
Yeah, whenever it's a kind of a steady speed, it's not really there. It's kind of when you're accelerating pretty much from a stop or when you're just trying to like enter on a highway or something like that. And if I drop the clutch or if I brake, it goes away.
Right. And if you accelerate real hard, the noise is a lot more severe?
I wouldn't say so. It's very faint all the time.
Very faint.
Whenever it's there, it's faint.
Whenever it's there, it's faint. But if you were to not accelerate the car, but rather just rev up the engine, in other words, if you were in neutral and you stepped on the gas pedal, would you hear the same noise, you think? Have you tried that?
I have not.
Are you near the car now?
I'm actually not.
You're not near the car. So let's assume that you're not getting it. I mean, I would imagine if you had, for example, a loose belt, it could make that kind of noise. Can you make the noise for us?
Kind of like that.
But if you're stepping on the gas pedal, it doesn't immediately do that, does it?
Pretty much stays the same when I hear it. It doesn't really change in kind of tone or anything.
Well, there are two things it's likely to be. My first reaction was that you had a bad motor mount and that when you accelerated, the fan was hitting the shroud. And that would make an annoying kind of noise, but it wouldn't be that high, high-pitched noise. I mean, it sounds more like you have a bad belt or a bad belt tensioner.
Yeah.
Okay.
And that would be relatively easy to discover.
Yeah, you're not going to discover. You're going to take it to someplace.
You got to do that. You can't just drive around and go past all these places.
Well,
maybe that one of these days that if it is a belt, it's going to break.
And when it breaks, you'll say, hey, the noise is gone. Why are all these lights on the dashboard on? So and that's going to happen. You could, during this time that you owned it and the time that your mother had it and was listening to the noise, was there not an occasion to take it into a shop even for an oil change?
Definitely occasion, and we just didn't do it.
You just didn't do it. So this car is like the family jalopy now. Are there any other siblings in the family?
Nope, I'm an only child.
An only child, oh boy.
Well, you got to go have it looked at right away because it's whatever it is, it's going to break.
Yeah, okay. On the other hand, there's some scientific pursuit here that suggests that you shouldn't look at it. I mean, how can we
forget about the science?
How can we
stuff.
Possibly know how long a screeching belt can exist before it breaks? I mean, most rational people, Hannah, will go and have the thing replaced probably at the first sign of the noise. So we never know. We don't have any data tell us how long a screeching belt will last before it breaks and leaves you stuck in Poughkeepsie.
We might be up to 2 years.
Right. So I think in the interest of science, you have a responsibility to the scientific community to drive this and ignore it until it breaks.
And what you have to do is put a bicycle in the trunk.
Right.
So you can get home.
Good luck and get it looked at. See you later.
Will do. Thank you very much.
Bye. 888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, this is Carrie calling from Simsbury, Connecticut.
Hi, Carrie. How are you? Simsbury?
I'm good, thanks. Simsbury.
Okay.
So we need you to settle a bet for my spouse and I, and I'm hoping that I'm going to win, even though it's only a dollar.
Oh, you're going to win, Carrie.
Okay, good.
Dollar. $1.
Okay, so this is what my spouse does. What he'll do is he'll drive one of our vehicles, and he will shut the car off and then put it in gear after he shuts the car off. And my argument is that I don't think that's very good for the car. It isn't automatic.
You mean he puts it into park from whatever gear he had been in when he shut it off?
Is that bad for the car?
No.
He won. Are you telling me that he won the bet?
It doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter.
No, it doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter.
Does he explode? Well, here's what might matter.
We can't say it's the right way to do it because it doesn't matter. They're both
Wait a minute, Carrie. There's a chance for you to win the bet here.
Please help me. We're
working with you, kid.
No, we're going to have to fight with each other.
We need to know what his explanation, what his rationale is, because maybe even though he's not harming the car, and he's right about that, his explanation
there might
be
some dangerous thing.
Well, maybe it's also cockamamie that we can berate him for doing that, for having that logic. So does he give you a reason why he's doing this?
Well, this is a very interesting question. Yeah. I asked him that because he used to not do it. And I've noticed in the last, 6 months or so, he does it a lot more often.
Uh-huh.
And so his response was he's not really thinking about it. And then we, in fact, discussed it again today. And he said that he likes to be, and these were his words, a procedural deviant.
Oh, he's a deviant. So he doesn't like to play by the... And this is the way he's chosen a little civil disobedience here.
Right, like it's a way of acting out, maybe. I'm just going to do this and not follow the rules of how I would learn to do it way back when.
Oh, so he's not denying that the rules tell him to do something else.
Well, that came out this morning that he actually did acquiesce to me and say, I know that this is not the way I was taught, but nonetheless, I don't think it matters. So therefore, I'm going to do it this way.
Oh, I don't think I'd interfere with this, and I'll tell you why.
He's absolutely right about that.
Okay.
Yeah, no, he's not hurting anything. So you can stop worrying about the car.
Okay.
But I would worry about his deviant nature. And I think if you do anything to thwart him here, he's apt to taking his civil disobedience into another area.
Right.
Oh. Right. Like he may start running around the neighborhood naked with purple spray paint on his head. So you certainly don't want that, do you?
No.
Yeah, so I...
So we're just going to give him this.
I would think I would give him this.
A little pleasure.
Yeah.
Yeah, and if this is as far as it goes, consider yourself a very, very lucky woman.
I actually do.
So how old is this guy?
40, and he just turned 40 in December, so maybe that has something to do with it.
Oh, yeah.
But see, the other interesting thing is he's an aerospace engineer, so he's used to sort of following things play by play.
Oh, yeah.
It does feel like it's a little out of the ordinary to step outside of the box.
Well, you know what? He's got to change professions.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
And I think he's got to... We had a call earlier from a fellow named Seth, who is a puppeteer.
Uh-huh.
I think he needs to team up with Seth. I think they need to go on the road together. And I think he has to get away from this high-pressure, regimented kind of life.
Okay, so I'm going to deliver the news and then also hand over my dollar.
Yeah, so when he comes home, are you, like, extra loving to him? Are you understanding that he has a very stressful exacting kind of job? Are you there for him, and you have home cooked meals waiting for him?
You're kidding, right? This is a joke. We actually commute together to and from work. We work in the same town.
You work in the same town.
Yeah, we both work full time, okay. So we have a lot of car time.
Yeah.
All right. Well, a lot of car time, and you never drive. He does the driving.
We split it. But I'm not a procedural deviant like him.
Well, I would yield on this, Carrie, but I would watch him carefully.
Okay.
Yeah, and if he buys any purple spray paint, call us.
I will do that.
All right. Good luck.
Thank you very much.
See you. Bye-bye.
Take care.
Well, look, we've got to take a short break, but when we come back, we'll answer our last week's puzzler.
What was it about? Remind me.
It was about a guy who was getting lousy mileage, and no one can figure out why.
It wasn't my neighbor Frank, was it?
Why?
I thought he spotted me the other night sucking the gas out of his expedition.
No, well, you're safe for now, at least, or maybe not. It wasn't Frank, but I'll have the whole story and the solution, and we'll take more of your calls in just a minute.
So please stay tuned.
400,000 miles, a broke down truck. I crawled out of Nashville on a broken down luck. Falling to rust at the hems and the seams. She's painted the color of broken down dreams. Rust in the race, we're as thin as a dime. My 58 Apache gets to work on time. Singing
hallelujah, hallelujah, baby. Hallelujah, she's a rolling on home. Singing hallelujah, hallelujah, baby. Hallelujah, standing all alone.
And even though the Obama's new puppy barks at the radio whenever he hears us say it, this is NPR, National Public Radio.
Hey, if you'd like to hear more of car talk...
Excuse me. Are you talking to your invisible friend Ernie again?
I am not. Look, there are real people who want more car talk. Plenty of people who need help with their insomnia.
Well, if you're having trouble sleeping or just have odd taste in radio shows, remember you can download a ton of our older shows at our website.
Just go to cartalk.com and click where it says listen to the show. From there, you're on your own. Hi, we're back. You're listening to Car Talk with us, Click and Clack, the Tappert Brothers, and we're here to talk about cars, car repair, and the answer to last week's puzzler. Mm. This was from my Teen Driver series, and it was also automotive in nature, and it was sent in by a fellow named John Anderson from Superior, Wisconsin.
Yeah.
You ready?
Yeah.
John writes the following. A few years ago, a service manager friend who worked for the local Toyota dealer told me this story. He had a customer with a fairly new Camry who came in regularly complaining of lousy gas mileage. You know, there's always a few of those customers. He was getting between half and two-thirds of the mileage he should have been getting.
Mm.
Well, the shop checked everything they could think of, from dragging brakes to low tire pressure to slipping transmission. They did a computer analysis of the engine. They checked for a faulty thermostat and all the other bogus stuff that they hear on Car Talk all the time that could contribute to bad mileage.
Yeah.
Well, after several visits, they found nothing wrong. They even brought Jack Bauer in to interrogate the owner. Do you drive above the speed limit? No, never, he says. Jack Rabbit starts? No, I swear. Excessive idling? No, never, really. Do you have a teenage son who drives the car? There's a pause. Well, yes, but very little, because the car is so new, I've limited his driving. In fact, he only uses it to drive to his friend's house to study and practice the oboe. In fact, his friend's mother confirmed for me that it just sits there in their driveway for hours on end. And if they do go anywhere, they use her son's car. So even if they are joyriding around town, they're not doing it in my car. After listening intently, the service manager suggests that the customer go to the parts department and purchase an item and install it on his car himself. The customer was able to do this easily without even opening the hood. Now, the item cost less than $20, and it solved the problem. The customer's mileage was restored to normal. What did he buy?
Yeah, that's good.
Isn't it? Well, your neighbor Frank should have bought one. He bought a lock and gas cap. Even though the car was in the driveway, they were siphoning it, and he said he told the truth. I'm not joyriding around in your car, Dad.
Yeah.
Well, we're joyriding around with your gas. they were siphoning out just enough.
To put in the other car.
To put in the other car. And they thought the old man wouldn't notice.
Wow.
But he did, and he got caught. And boy, that must have been a sad,
oh, yeah.
sad day when they popped that thing and said, hey, wait a minute. We can't get any gas out of this thing. Anyway, do we have a winner?
Yeah, yeah. The winner is Kate Bailey from Frederick, Colorado. And for having her answer selected at random from among all the correct answers that we got, Kate's going to get a $26 gift certificate to the Shameless Commerce Division at CarTalk.com, with which she can get Maternal Combustion, our CarTalk Mother's Day album.
By the way, that's a collection of particularly funny calls we've taken on the show over the years on the subjects of mothers.
Yeah, like the mother of all valve jobs?
No, mother in the traditional sense,
oh,
you
oh,
heathen.
Oh.
Anyway, we'll have a new puzzler later on. In the meantime, give us a call at 888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, guys. It's Adam from Manhattan calling.
Hi, Adam.
Manhattan?
What's going on, man?
Well, my parents, about 5 years ago, moved to Manhattan. They sold their home in the suburbs, and I inherited their 2002 Toyota Camry. It has 89,000 miles on it. It has served me admirably. But I began to take notice this winter when the temperature would dip below about 30 degrees, and I'd go into it, and maybe I hadn't started it up for a few days.
Yeah.
I'd turn the key in the ignition. Nothing would happen. Silence. There would be a flashing on the engine lights would flash.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'd hear this sound from the left side of the dash, and it went something like this. And then it would be followed by this other sound. And it would start, and it was all okay, except that the clock would have reset itself.
Oh.
Well, this is a classic case of a car that needs an enema.
Absolutely.
Do I have to deliver it?
Yeah, I think so.
You have to.
You're the only one around.
Can you find the tailpipe?
You didn't.
No. Listen, you do have a classic case of something, but it's not that. You have a battery with a bad cell.
Really?
Yeah, you do. And your battery is a 12-volt battery like every other car has.
Except it might not be 12 anymore.
No, it's 10 and change.
Oh.
And the reaction in one of those cells is almost near completion. There's something wrong with what's going on there, and it's not contributing enough electrons to the cause.
Mm.
So when you turn the key, it tries to crank, and you're hearing some of the relays kick in, you know, the fuel pump relay and the cutout relay and all these things, which are located in front of the driver. And that's where you hear that initial noise coming from. That okay, and then the thing starts going root, root, because the starter motor is trying to draw energy from the battery and can't get enough because there's not enough push. You need 12 volts to push those electrons out.
And it's possible that the battery that's in the car is the original battery.
So I just switch it out.
You're just going to go to the auto part. It's something you can do yourself. In fact, you can get the car started because it probably starts more readily now that it's getting warmer, right?
It does.
Yeah. There you go.
So, well, you might have to not worry about this until next winter. And by then, the car could be stolen. And then Camry's one of the easiest to steal cars. You know that, don't you?
No, I did not know that.
Oh, I think it's at the top of the list. That's one of the cars most often stolen.
And I park it on the street.
Yeah.
Then don't buy a new battery.
No, you don't want them stealing.
You don't want the new guy to have the battery.
Just let it go.
Let it go.
Wish it well.
Exactly. And you get a new car.
Uh-huh.
But if you want to keep this car and you want to get the battery, you can start it up and drive to an auto parts store.
Right.
And you can buy the battery and you can put it in. I imagine you sound like a fairly handy guy.
I am completely unhandy.
Unhandy.
Yes, so...
Well, even unhandiness could get the battery in there.
Yeah, but you might blow off a hand doing it because if you hook the battery up backwards...
Yeah, he could do
it
that.
It could be serious. Maybe you can get one of those guys with the hairy chest that frequent these kinds of stores to come and give you a few pointers as to how to replace the battery.
Uh-huh. So I wouldn't go to, say, the Toyota dealership here in Manhattan today.
Oh, no.
You needn't do that. You could go to your local gas station, in fact, and say, I think I need a new battery, and they'll test it, and they'll say, yeah, you need a new battery.
And they'll get it, and they'll put it in, and you'll be all set.
And if they blow the car up, at least you're not there to see it happen.
Now, the last time I was took it in to change the oil, I asked him about the battery. He checked it, and he said it was okay.
Well, there is one other possibility, and that is that there is corrosion between the battery cables and the posts. And if there is, you can get the same kind of symptom. But generally, that doesn't make the clock stop, because the clock will stop working and reset to 12 o'clock if the voltage of the battery drops down below, say, 11.5 volts or 11 volts.
Uh-huh.
And a dead cell would do that. A bad connection wouldn't necessarily do that, but it could.
Okay, good detective
but
work.
But in any case, you need to have, at the very least, the battery cables and terminals cleaned, okay? And my guess is you're going to need a new battery.
Mm-hmm.
But get it checked out. If they say the battery's okay, have them clean everything up, and you'll be fine.
Terrific.
Good luck, Adam.
Thanks for your advice.
And you don't have to do the enema thing, so that's a relief, I'm sure.
That is a huge relief, fellas.
See you later.
Bye.
Bye. 888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, guys. This is Mylene calling from Sacramento, California.
Mylene.
Mylene.
M-Y-L-E-N-E?
It's M-A-Y-L-E-E-N.
Okay, got it.
Wow.
All right, Mylene, what's up?
I have a 2001 Hyundai Elantra, and sometimes when I'm driving down the street, all of a sudden it tugs back, and it happens on the freeway, it happens on the surface streets, and it's not all the time, but when it happens, it's just, startling. And also, I notice sometimes the check engine light comes on, and sometimes when that happens, I feel that the car is sluggish after the check engine light comes on. So lately I've been pulling over to the side, turning off the engine, and then when I turn it back on, I feel that it runs normally again.
So you've got like 131,000 miles in this thing?
99,000.
Well, it could be a lot of different things, but fortunately the check engine light is on, which is going to allow whoever you take it to
to figure it out right away.
There you go.
Oh, okay.
And my guess is they're going to find out it could be something even as simple as a random misfire caused by a bad spark plug or a bad ignition coil. When was the last time when did it get tuned up last?
Maybe about
2003.
6 months ago.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, that's not bad.
Or was it misbehaving then?
No, it's probably started about 2 months ago.
2 months ago. Well, take it in someplace, and they'll hook the scanner up to it, and it'll be simple. You'll find out it's either a bad oxygen sensor or a bad crank sensor, or maybe even just as simple as a bad coil or something. But you've got to fix it, because eventually it's going to break mm-hmm. on you. This is a warning.
Yeah, and you're not going to go anywhere.
Okay.
Yeah, so it's probably not anything too serious. But if it is, don't blame us. See you, Mylene.
Thanks, guys.
All right, take care. Bye-bye. 888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hey, what's up? This is Nathan from Philadelphia.
Hey, Nathan.
Hi, Nathan.
What's going on, man?
I have a 2005 black Volkswagen Jetta. I bought it used, and I don't think it was a very sunny day when I bought it, because when I bought it, I did notice it was like a 6-inch scratch on the side of the car.
Ah.
So I was watching television, and I saw this product called Fix-It Pro, which is supposed to be this amazing scratch remover, or so it appeared on the television show, where you just apply it like a marker, and it just sort of wipes the scratch away. And this is not a very deep scratch. So I bought the product, and I used it, and it more or less looks like somebody put a piece of masking tape over the scratch.
Ah.
Like, it does not look good at all. And what I didn't know was you're supposed to use it in the summertime because it's supposed to be UV activated or activated by the sunlight. And they sell it all year. So I bought it in like January. And so it kind of hardened and some of it kind of ran off and it's sort of excessy and it's kind of clumpy. And so I have not been able to come up with a way to remove it. I've tried like tarp and tar and
sap. Oh, yeah. No. There's only one way to remove it. And you have to drive that. What's on the side of the car? The driver's side?
It's on the driver's side.
So you see it all the time.
You gotta see it all the time.
Yeah, well, you're gonna have to drive it into a guardrail. and that will scrape that stuff right off.
A guardrail.
Yeah, guardrail. Yeah. Jeez.
Well, I've done that with former cars, and it's a lot of paperwork.
Yeah.
So.
Well, what you can do is you can take it to a body. You can try this yourself. It looks like you're the kind of guy that's interested in do-it-yourself kinds of things. You can buff that stuff off with a polishing compound, mild abrasive. Okay. And what it'll do is it'll take that stuff off, and hopefully it won't take any of the paint off.
Yeah, if you do it gently, you can get all the stuff off and not screw up the paint.
You're going to use something called a polishing compound, which is what what body shops use to take off scratches and whatnot. It won't take off that big scratch, but it may take off this stuff. But I'd be willing to bet there's got to be some kind of a solvent that'll get this off that won't hurt the paint.
Right.
And I would take it to a body shops have all kinds of solvents like, toluene, lacquer thinner, and all these kinds of things that eat up brain cells. And find the guy that has the slowest speech. And he's the guy you want to talk to.
He's the guy who's the most experienced.
Right, exactly. the guy that his vocabulary is down to about 7 words, he's the guy send Boris out. And Boris will come out, and he'll use the right solvent, and they'll take this stuff off in 2 seconds. But the body shop that's next to our shop has all kinds of deadly chemicals that can remove anything.
Okay.
You know, and if none of those chemicals works, then you have to, basically, in a sense, grind it off with the polishing compound. But that's a lot more work. I think the chemicals will work. And then after you get this stuff off and it's back to where it was looking before, throw everything away. You might want to try covering up that little scratch with a black laundry pan or something like that. Or maybe even, you ready for this? A little black paint.
Yeah, do you go to the dealers and get that, what they call filler paint?
You touch up paint. This body shop, this guy with the slurred speech, he's going to be able to fill in that little crack for you.
Okay.
And the great thing about black is that there's only one shade of black.
But the terrible thing is that when you have black cars, I feel like every imperfection shows.
It's counterintuitive. But the car that looks the best and is easiest to keep the cleanest is a white car. And black cars always look the worst. Unless they just come out of the body shop when they've all been shined up and they look great for like 20 minutes.
Right.
Well, actually, now that you have this stuff, if you manage to get it off and get everything cleaned up, you can wait till the weather gets really warm and you can try following the directions.
Right, yeah. I know. I didn't want to name them by name because, I didn't know how many people actually use this product and it might actually work for them.
So you bought this on late night TV, right?
There's a guy, there's a has-been actor. I can't remember his name, but he was endorsing the product and it looked really good. It looked
Is he the guy that's like really little, loud? We have a fabulous new product here.
Yes, yeah, he's got a beard. He looks
Billy Mays.
Billy Mays, that's his name.
Billy Mays.
I couldn't remember.
He can sell refrigerators to the Eskimos. I mean, he's great.
Yeah.
And he's so energetic. And his loud voice, you want to just buy the thing so you can turn the station and shut him up.
Yeah.
But you take it to the body shop, ask them how much they want to fix the scratch. I bet it's not as much as you think. And you don't want the whole door painted. You just want it so the scratch doesn't jump out at you. And they'll be able to do something to help you out.
And if all else fails, I'll try the guardrail method.
There you go. See you, Nathan.
All right. Thank you, guys.
You're a lot
Have
of fun. Bye-bye, man.
Wow.
All right. Look, before we get to the new puzzler, we have to take a short break.
Can I read some fan mail first?
Sure. I could always use a little appreciation, a little boost to my self-esteem. Go ahead.
All right. This is from a guy named Alan. As a 55-year-old guy, training for a marathon is difficult and time-consuming. But thanks to you guys, I have been able to run farther than I ever thought possible.
Wow.
During my long training runs, I normally start getting a fair amount of pain in my quads after about 5 miles. When this happens, I change from music on my iPod to your podcast.
Uh-huh.
It makes all the difference. For the next 5 miles or so, the pain in my ears makes me forget the pain in my legs. And I just wanted to say thanks.
I'll give you a pain, Alan. Wise guy.
All right. So what's your new puzzler about?
It's from my Pain in the Neck series. No, it's from my Fasten Your Seatbelt series.
Really?
Yes, we'll have that and more of your car questions, too, right after the break.
We'll be back in a minute. There is a hollow moon and a big black sky from Apollo's tomb to the 405. There is a shadow. We'll be right back.
And even though hibernating bears decide to hit the snooze button till July whenever they hear us say it, this is NPR National Public Radio. We're back. You're listening to Car Talk with us, Click and Clack, the Tappert Brothers. And we're here to talk about cars, car repair, and the new Puzzler. And,
yeah, go ahead.
And this was sent in by a fellow named Rob Kiff. And I said fasten your seatbelts. It has to do with air travel.
Oh, of course.
Of course, of course. Yeah. You ready?
Yeah.
I apologize, Rob. I had to change it around a little bit. But I think you'll agree that it's an improvement. Last New Year's Eve, a friend of mine was trying to fly from Chicago, Illinois, to Hartford, Connecticut on short notice and found himself, as such, on the standby list.
Mm-hmm.
As the departure time began to draw near, he decided to approach the ticket agent and plead his case.
Mm.
So with the most pathetic and helpless look he could possibly muster, he inquired about his position on the list and of course, what she thought were his chances of actually getting a seat on this flight.
Hmm.
She told him he was number 15 on the list. His jaw dropped and his shoulders slumped noticeably. Without waiting for him to ask, she volunteered the following information. Immediately above you on the list is a married couple, the Bajgalupos. And ahead of them are two other couples, the Smiths and the Joneses. Ahead of those three couples is another couple and their teenage daughter. And finally, the first five spots on the list are occupied by an elderly couple with their three grandchildren. Oh, he moaned. Well, how many seats are actually available? Let me see, she said as she scanned the passenger list. Looks like four seats. He walked away dejected and resigned to spending New Year's Eve sleeping on the floor at the airport.
Yeah.
But when they closed the door of the plane, he had a seat. How did that happen? Now, if you think you know the answer, write it on an Iron Mike Pro Model MP4 hopper-fed pitching machine with heavy-duty arm and hand simulator, steel-reinforced construction, of course, 25 to 85 mile an hour pitch speed, and 600 baseball capacity, and send it along with chain mail and full body armor to Puzzler Tower. Wouldn't that be a lot of fun?
Yeah.
Car Talk Plaza, Box 3500, Harvard Square, Cambridge.
Our Fair City.
Matt 02238.
Or you can email us your answer from cartalk.com.
Look, if you have a car question for us right now, we're at 888-CAR-TALK. We can't wait. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
This is Megan. I'm from Utah.
Hi, Megan.
Megan.
Just Utah, the whole state? You're not...
No. Well, I grew up in one part, and I live in now the northern part in Provo.
Oh, Provo.
Provo.
Okay,
yeah.
So you didn't want to divulge your exact identity. There may be a reason for that. We'll find out, I'm sure.
What's up?
Okay, I have a 2000 Chevy Impala, and I have this problem. Most often, it's going on uphill or in the middle of driving. When I stop and I start again, this happens. I'll push the gas pedal, and when it starts accelerating, it makes this really high revving noise, like, and then when it finally gets to change into gear, it clunks really hard, like clunk, and it usually revs higher, like first gear goes almost all the way to 30 instead of switching between 20 and 25, and then second gear, it does the same thing. By third gear, it's not as bad, and by fourth gear, it usually doesn't do it at all, and then sometimes if I stop the car and turn it off, like at a stoplight or something in the middle of traffic, turn it back on, it'll stop doing it. But it usually picks up doing it eventually.
And when does it not happen?
Whenever it doesn't feel like happening. One day I thought, I will take it to the mechanic. And so I drove it around for 2 hours trying to make it do the noise, and it didn't do it. But then some days I'll drive it just a little while, and then it will do it.
Uh-huh. Well, what you have is a classic case of delayed upshift.
What does that mean?
Oh, I don't know, but I thought that would keep you at bay for a few minutes.
It means it's not shifting into the next higher gear soon enough.
Uh-huh.
And instead, it's staying in the lower gear too long.
So the engine,
right.
For example, if you didn't shift out of first at all, if you kept it in low and
right.
you just kept stepping on the gas pedal, you would increase your speed.
And you would hear the same thing.
You'd hear the engine
right.
speed going up and up and up and up, but at some point the automatic transmission is supposed to take over. It may
Correct.
Be that you need a software upgrade or there's something wrong with the transmission. And I dare say you might have to take it to your dealer, unless this guy at your local repair shop knows what to do. But he didn't hear it or feel it?
No, well, see, I didn't take it in because it didn't happen. Make the noise.
Oh.
All right.
Well, you know what you might want to do? Leave it with him for a few days. Can you do that?
Okay.
Yeah, let him drive it back and forth to work.
We encourage our customers to do that when they have a problem that we can't figure out, and we burn up their gas for a few days.
Yeah.
So we all take turns driving it home, especially the guys who live in New Hampshire. I'll take it.
I was wondering, I'm supposed to go on a vacation, like, today.
Oh.
Is it going to die on me?
Well, I would say the first thing you ought to do, because there's a small chance that you're low on transmission fluid.
Okay.
So you should at least check that.
Okay.
And you might want to go to a place, go to your local guy that you've taken it to or you were about to take it to. Ask him to check the transmission fluid level and to see if it's clean. If it isn't, you might want to change it and put new fluid in there. And it might solve your problem, but it might not. If it doesn't, he can see if there are any bulletins on the shift pattern.
Okay.
And have you had this vehicle since 2000?
No, we bought it in 2005, and then after we bought it, we realized the transmission had already been rebuilt.
Oh.
I know, we said the same thing.
And there was one of those kitchen table rebuilds.
I don't know. We've only put, it's got 115 on it, but the rebuilt transmission has got about 60, 70 on it.
No, it might be time for another rebuild, but if your local guy can't figure it out, take it to the dealer, and it may be that you need a rebuild. Hopefully not.
Yikes. That's expensive, huh?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Sorry, delay your trip.
Okay.
See you, Megan.
Thank you. Have a good day.
Bye-bye. 888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, guys.
Hi.
This is Mike from Port St. Lucie, Florida.
Hi, Mike. What's going on, man?
From where?
Port St. Lucie, Florida.
Where is that?
It's just above West Palm Beach.
Oh.
Tommy's almost a Floridian now. He spent a few weeks there this winter. And until the authorities found out where he was, that he had to leave.
I had to leave. Exactly.
What's going on, Mike?
I have a 2003 Mercury Sable.
Uh-huh.
And the air conditioning vents are blowing hot air out of it.
Not good with the rapid approach of summer.
Well, you know, which is why this was pretty timely that I was able to contact you in time.
Yeah.
New York, huh? Were you from New York?
Yeah, Queens, Lox. I was born in Queens.
Yeah, you sound like my wife used to sound, except your voice. Her voice isn't as deep. It's a little deeper. Anyway, go on.
Now, I'll give you a little background. I changed the compressor on this car about 2 months ago.
You had to change it or you did it yourself?
I did it myself.
Okay.
I changed the compressor about 2 months ago, and it was working fine. And we had a cold snap down here. It was about 40 degrees, I guess. And my niece had poked the air conditioning button by accident, and it started blowing hot air out. I didn't think much of it, but now that it's getting warm out, I dropped the temperature. It's got an electronic temperature control, and you drop it down to 60 degrees, and it blows out 600 degrees.
Uh-huh.
Now, the compressor's kicking on, the pipes are cold.
Mm-hmm. So the air conditioner is working. What's not working is your climate control thing.
Correct. Now, all the other buttons work. Like, it switches over from top to bottom, side to side. I put my hand under there, and I do feel cold air seeping out of somewhere and under the dash.
Yeah, it's a door that isn't opening.
There's a door that's not open.
More importantly, there's a door that's not closing. You got to shut off the heat. And there's a door that's got to close to shut off the flow of hot air from the heater core and allow the cool air to come in from the evaporator. And that's not what's happening. So it may be that controller is gone on the dashboard.
Now
what?
Do I gamble on the electronics because it's part of the radio?
Yeah.
It's the radio. The whole thing is in one piece.
Well, here's what I suggest. I mean, you can start ripping things apart. You could go to a junkyard and buy that whole assembly and plunk it in there. Okay, and that's probably going to fix it. But if that didn't fix it, you would have spent a lot of time and some money to get to that point. I'm going to suggest you take it someplace and have them diagnose it for you. Then you can go and do the repair.
Yeah.
Now that you have the new compressor, there's no sense not having your air conditioner work. You spent a lot of time and money.
For me, I don't mind. I don't drive the car, but my wife is.
You're all set.
That's even more important.
Tell her to wear loose-fitting clothing. She'll be all right.
Right.
Except for the worst
weather.
We came
down here for the three S's, you know, the sunburn, snakes, and swamps. We want to make sure that...
How's that working out so far?
Well, I got the sunburn and the snakes down pretty good. But, they're doing a lot of landfill, so there's not too many swamps left.
Yeah.
Take it to the dealer. Have them diagnose it. They'll tell you what's going on. But I'm going to guess it's that whole thing with the radio in it and all that you're going to have to replace.
I certainly hope it's that, because working underneath the dashboard. And,
oh, that's fun.
Forget about it. I'm not as slim as I used to be.
It's so, the good life that's getting to you.
Yeah. I butter my sides and slip under the dashboard.
Well, if your wife sees you crying out for help with your feet sticking out the window, she'll know why.
Nah, she doesn't check on me. I was afraid of that.
Well, she'll find you the next morning.
Just swallow the buzzards.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, keep the doors closed. You never know. You don't want a snake going up your pant leg while you're lying under the dashboard. good luck, Mike.
Good luck.
Thank you. Gentlemen.
Thanks for your call. Oh, I think I planted a seed now. He's going to be worried about those snakes. 888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hey, guys. It's Colleen from Lancaster, Pennsylvania. How
hey,
are you?
Colleen. We're well. How are you?
Lancaster.
Pretty good.
That's an Amish country.
That is Amish country.
Yeah. It isn't in. It is, right.
Hey, I have a 2000 Volkswagen Passat, and I've had this car for about 4 years. And it's been fine up until the last couple months. And as each week goes by, a new light comes up on my dashboard. The ABS light is on there. It's got the service manual lights coming up. It's telling me my trunk is open. And then the little part in the middle, what kind of gives you the information, you know, important stuff like the temperature and how many miles you go, it keeps blinking at me and says, stop, stop, stop.
And you sit there and you say, shut up, shut up. Wow.
And it's saying stop, 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 because maybe something else is going on too.
Well, it's telling me that the ABS and my brake light, those are the two that I'm most concerned about. So I called up the dealer.
Yeah.
And he said, don't worry about it. He said, it's probably just a bad sensor. So I went with that. And, you know, the fact that when I actually step on my brakes, the car stops, I assume, he's probably right.
Well, yeah, but you don't have ABS anymore because it can't work with 3 out of 4 sensors working. So it could
be the advice that you got was not good.
Yeah, because if it really is a sensor, for a couple of $100, you can get a new sensor put in and you can have the thing working again. And you can turn off that damn light.
Well, you know, that's my real issue, is I don't know what the temperature is outside without that center panel telling me.
Right, because when that display is saying stop car now, you're going to die. They figure learning what the outside temperature is pretty secondary, huh?
Well, how important is the ABS though? Because the Volkswagen guy seemed to think, you know, it's not a big deal.
Well,
to not have the ABS.
I don't think he's right about that.
Yeah, I mean, and the systems are designed so that it's fail-safe. In other words, if the ABS system goes down, which yours clearly has, every car is designed so that the brakes work like they did in the old days. Your brakes will work fine unless you need to do a panic stop under adverse conditions, in which case they're going to work like cars of yesteryear. And you're not going to have the advantage of having the ABS brakes and maybe averting a disaster. So I think you should take it in, and you'll find out what's going on with your ABS. Now, maybe something a lot worse, but if it's going to be a few $100 to fix it, you might as well fix it, don't you think?
Yeah, well, I mean, if it's a couple $100. Now, the other thing
the service light came on because you haven't had the thing in to get service for a long time.
Well, I did take it in once to my other mechanic, but they couldn't get the sensor to come on, so then he gave it back to me, and then, you know, on the way home from the mechanic, of course, the light went on, and it's been on ever since.
Okay, and when you get into the car and you first start it up, does it come up, that display say stop car?
Not always, but usually within the course of a couple miles, it does.
Yeah. Well, it may be telling you to stop the car because your oil pressure is low or your engine is overheating, and I don't know that.
Yeah, everything else seems to be okay.
Yeah, it may be telling you to stop the car because your trunk is open. I don't know. And your trunk may not be open, but the sensor may be bad. There's a little switch that tells the computer whether or not your trunk is closed. You know, I would go. And when you're there, they can figure out whether or not the thing is overheating or whether you're out of oil or anything like that. All those minor things.
Yeah, and if the trunk is open or not.
Yeah, in short, Colleen, I think you have to go to the dealer. Because I think the local guy you're going, and the dealer's probably 75 miles away, right?
Well, not quite 75, maybe 65.
65, okay. Well, you're going to have to make the pack a lunch and be prepared to spend the day.
Here's my other question. Should I just leave it there and start over here with a new car? Or you think it's worth keeping a...
Did the TMI light come on?
No TMI lights.
Trade me in? Well, you know, when you here's what you do. This would be a great opportunity while you're at the dealership to kind of walk through the showroom.
She's not ready.
All
for
right.
That.
Yeah, you're not ready. You're not ready for a new.
No,
you
she's
are ready
not
for
gonna...
you are ready for a new car. I can tell.
Yeah, I'm not really sure what to do with this car. You know, it's paid for, and that's a nice thing. But
it is. But
little things keep going wrong with it, and it needs some new tires now. And
right, but let's say you spent $3,000 and you got this car in ship shape. Would you do that?
I don't know.
Well,
I don't...
that sounds pretty silly, actually. Why don't you spend 20 and buy another one? So, you know, we've always advised people if you have a car that's viable and you can fix it up for a few $1,000, and there's no reason why you can't get many more years out of this, assuming that you haven't wrecked it by running it out of oil or something, and the things that you've mentioned that are wrong seem relatively minor.
Yeah, and you may find out that all these things can be fixed relatively inexpensively, and you keep it forever.
Well, that would be the way to go, as long as the next thing isn't going to break down.
I don't know. Forever's a long time, but I would maybe 5 years. See you, Colleen.
All right, thanks, guys.
Thanks for your
good
call.
Luck.
Bye-bye. Well, it's happened again. You've wasted another perfectly good hour listening to Car Talk. Our esteemed producer is Doug the Subway Fugitive, not a slave to fashion, Bongo Boy Berman. Our associate producers are Louis Cronin, the Barbarian, and David the Calves of Belleville Green. Our senior web lackey is Doug the Old Gray Mare. Our engineer is John Cartman Parati. Our production assistant is Aaron Wax. Our technical, spiritual, and menu advisor, just back from the Harvard Lawn, Grey Poupon, Ice Bonbon, Lawn of Fawn, Fried Wonton, Buttered Drawn Garlic Prawn, and Steamed Udon Early Dawn Munchathon is John Bugsy Lawler. Our public opinion pollster is Paul Murky of Murky Research, assisted by statistician Margin of Error. Our customer care representative is Heywood Jabuzoff. Our motivational speaker is Boris Oxoff. Our director of staff bonuses is Ray Vaughn. Tommy's personal psychiatrist is Manny Luz Cruz. Our optometric firm is CFI Care. Guest accommodations are provided by the Horseshoe Road Inn. The head of our Working Mother Support Group is Erasmus B. Dragon. Our chief counsel from the law firm of Dewey, Cheatham & Howe is Hugh Lewis Dewey, known to the squirrels taking GRE review classes in Harvard Square as Huey Louie Dewey. Thanks so much for listening. We're Click and Clack, the Tappert Brothers. And please, don't drive like my brother.
And please, don't drive like my brother.
We'll be back next week. Bye-bye. CDs of the show, which is number 917, along with clothing, audio collections, and other Car Talk gifts, are available at 888-CAR-JUNK or by going to the Shameless Commerce division of our website, cartalk.com.
Also this week at cartalk.com, that new car smell. Isn't it wonderful?
It is.
No, it's not.
Oh, no?
That was a trick question. It's actually made up of a bunch of nasty outgases that can drop paint off a fence from 50 feet away.
Really?
That's why I always drive cars that are at least 40 years old. I'm quite the health nut, you know?
Oh, I didn't know about the health part.
Everything you need to know about the new car smell, all this week at cartalk.com.
Car Talk is a production of Dewey, Cheatham & Howe and WBUR in Boston.
And even though pirates move their eye patches over their ears whenever they hear us say it, this is NPR, National Public Radio.